Welcome, welcome, welcome to Flicking and Screaming. I'm Jed Sprague here with my co-host, Evan Fagundes.
Hello, everybody.
And this week, we are diving in to a true American classic.
Yes.
Boogie Nights.
Deep.
But before we get into Boogie Nights and why we chose this movie, Evan, how are we doing this week?
I know I say it every week, but I'm doing really well. Super excited to be here. Super excited to be talking. I'm actually in a new location. I'm in San Francisco. I've been staying with my mom currently because of the pandemic, but I'm back home right now in San Francisco, and I'm looking out at some great views, ready to talk about a wonderful movie, so I could not be doing better. How are you doing?
I'm great. For those of you that could just hear that in the background, that was me filling up my glass of wine. So could not be doing better. I'm also in a new location, very slightly less hot, and I say this very slightly. Yes. It could be much less hot if the AC was turned on in this room throughout the day. But nevertheless, I can't complain. At least I don't need a towel to wipe down my forehead.
A little look behind the curtains. Normally, while we're chatting about movies, Jed Sprague is sitting across from me. We're on Skype together. We can see each other. And he's usually sweating like a pig. he is roasting on a spit while we talk. So I'm glad to see him cooled off right now.
Yeah, ridiculous. Oh my god. All right, well, before we hop in to breaking down Boogie Nights, for those that didn't hear last week, the reason we chose this movie is because I've actually never seen I had never seen Boogie Nights before this week, and so it's a bit of a this is one of Evan's favorites, you know, also first impressions on like I said, an American classic. So that being said, I mean, we don't have too much more of, you know, of an agenda. Let's just hop in. Evan, give me the background. Give me the quick stats. Give me the baseball card on Boogie Nights. Yeah.
So Boogie Nights came out in 1997. It is listed as a, you know, drama comedy because there are plenty of laughs in this movie. There's also dramatic moments. And, you know, everything in between, really. So it came out, like I said, 1997. It's directed and written by Paul Thomas Anderson. This is Paul Thomas Anderson's second movie ever. Paul Thomas Anderson is a big fan of ours. I know he makes a ton of great movies. And this was really his like pet project from early on. He actually made in 1988 a like short film called The Dirk Diggler Story. And anyone who's familiar with this movie knows the main character played by Mark Wahlberg is named Dirk Diggler. And The Dirk Diggler Story is, you know, a very short version of what we see here with differences for sure. But this is definitely PTA's pet project.
Oh, when you told me to go and read the oral history of this movie, that was the best thing I ever did after watching this. It's so good. It gives such good context to like PTA and like being kind of weirdly obsessed with porn when he was a teenager, but not in like the sexual way,
like from the filmmaking way.
Yeah, in like the narrative storylines and you know, he's obviously an incredible director, and you know, having to deal with all these characters on set. And one of my favorite lines is like, you know, he wanted to make a movie and have it go smoothly. But instead, he had to deal with a white rapping 19-year-old Mark Wahlberg, which is just all-time comedy. But yeah, I mean, this movie I'd heard a lot about. I actually candidly didn't know a ton about it. Like, obviously, I knew the Dirk Diggler, like what it was, but I didn't really
like
know.
Legend.
I didn't know exactly what it was about, right? Yeah. So I came into this super blind. And this is a weird first thing to say, but I just lost my fucking shit when Philip Seymour Hoffman showed up on screen. I was like, oh my god,
it's wild. He's such a weird role. And you know, that's probably, and I'd love to hear, just to kind of round out, you know, the stats as you put it on this movie or the context. Philip Seymour Hoffman is one of the characters in it. I'm just going to kind of run through. This is one of the, and we're going to talk about this a lot over the next hour or so. This is one of the craziest casts ever, ever. I'm putting that out there.
Especially for a guy making his second movie.
Right. For guys making his second movie. You could tell, you know, there's a lot of legend about how popular, or not how popular, but how famous the script became before the movie was even made, going around Hollywood. One, because it's about a bunch of porn stars and people making pornos.
Yeah.
So that catches people's attention. But two, there are a lot of big time people in Hollywood who are like, wow, I need to be associated with this. I'm interested in this.
There's a lot of people that say there's nobody that can write a script that captures your attention. Like PTA.
Right.
And
supposedly it was like 170 pages long.
Which is like twice the length of...
Literally like twice the length of what a normal script is, yeah.
Which, the fact that this guy has the audacity... He's not that old at this point. He's, what, 26?
He's like 27? Yes.
Yeah, so he's a 26-year-old, has only made one movie, and he writes a 170-page epic about porn stars in the San Fernando Valley in the 70s, and people just lose their mind. Like, the audacity for this guy to just be like, yeah, I'm going to do this. So, all right. Run down this crazy cast. Just give me some
crazy cast. As Jed mentioned, crazy singing 19-year-old Mark Wahlberg is the main character. He plays Dirk Diggler, and I'm just gonna run through the supporting cast because, like we said, it's insane. So just going through it quickly: Burt Reynolds, Julianne Moore, Heather Graham, William H. Macy, John C. Reilly, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Don Cheadle, Luis Guzman, Alfred Molina, Thomas Jane. That is so absurd. That so legitimately here, let me throw some at you. If you were coming up with like the character actor Hall of Fame, or especially for like late 80s through the early 2000s, the Hall of Fame or the Mount Rushmore, what have you, you could read off that list
and it could be the
I mean, William H. Macy, John C. Reilly, Philip Seymour Hoffman,
Julianne Moore.
And Julianne Moore. See, the only reason I didn't say her in that category was because she's kind of a star. I mean, Julianne Moore, like,
I agree. And yeah, you're probably right. But I like the things I really remember her for and I love her for are her like character actor moments, like Big Lebowski. Right. Yeah. Like where she's just like doing.
Right. Where she's doing the weird stuff.
Yeah. It's the best. It's the best.
And she does. No one else. The post Coke look from Julianne Moore is really something else in this movie. She does a lot of lines in this movie, and the look that she has after she does them, you'd really think she's doing some method acting, is what I'll say. She's incredible, but that cast is so unbelievable. And you know, something that I'd like to mention with PTA is that I always look at directors and who they get to star in their movies. And when you look at a guy like PTA, he consistently has, you know, he has Philip Seymour Hoffman in three or four of his films. He has Joaquin Phoenix in three or four of his films. He consistently gets these great actors to give great performances, and they keep coming back, which tells me that it's like, you know, Philip Seymour Hoffman is one of the most respected actors of his generation. And the fact that he kept coming back and doing PTA movies means like,
there's a lot. Special. I think that's a mark of a great director, right? You look at all these great directors, Marty Scorsese, you know, I mean, even to an extent now, Greg Gerwig, you know, Wes Anderson, all these people. Tarantino, all these people, they get big names to want to do stuff with them. You know, they like, it's like stuff where you pick up the phone. This is my favorite Wes Anderson story is, Bill Murray supposedly just has one phone. He doesn't have a cell phone. He has one phone in his house. And and then one, I think, and if you want him in a role, he never actively seeks out roles. If you want him in a role, you call the phone and you leave a voicemail. But he knows Wes Anderson's number, and that's the only person he will pick up the phone for. Because he's just like, I'm in. Wow. Just tell me what I'm doing. Because he just trusts him so much to put him in situations to be. Yeah, it's like one of my favorite little anecdotes. But that just goes to show you, like, great actors want to work with great directors and people they feel comfortable with. And PTA is clearly he's a star maker. I mean, I don't we can get into Wahlberg takes later, but
and it's interesting.
I mean, I think Wahlberg isn't anything without this movie. I mean, he's Marky Mark in the Funky Bunch without this movie after having seen it.
Oh, completely. I completely agree that this movie is what propelled
Yeah,
him
I
into
think
being, you know, one of
he's
the
like
five
a
biggest movie stars of our
Vanilla
lifetime.
Ice in pop culture if he doesn't
Oh, wow.
if he
Oh, wow.
yeah
Vanilla
if
Ice
he
with
yeah he's an
Mavs.
underwear model if he doesn't it doesn't land this
Right.
role.
It definitely, I think it definitely went a long way. Wow, yeah, that's the cast, though. We'll talk a ton more about them. And you know, Paul Thomas Anderson, star maker, one guy, the oldest Hollywood type in this movie, Burt Reynolds, who gave a wonderful performance, accepted the Golden Globe for this role, best supporting actor at the Golden Globes. He won. And in his speech, you know, he laid bare that he and Paul Thomas Anderson didn't quite see eye to eye the whole time. And that seems to ring true with all the stories that we've heard coming out of this movie. At one point, supposedly Bert actually tried to throw a swing at young Paul Thomas Anderson, and was held back by a producer. And so it's funny to kind of hear that, how lots of these younger actors were huge fans of Paul Thomas Anderson and followed him onto, you know, other projects. And Burt Reynolds, the old, you know, the old stalwart in Hollywood, gave one of his best performances of all time and was like, "Nah,
Yeah.
I'm not going to work with that guy anymore. You know, I've
Yeah,
had my
super,
Paul
super
Thomas Anderson
interesting
fix. I'm good."
kind of dynamic there. All right.
Yeah.
Before we hop into some of our
Wow, I love it.
categories, part of the
Okay.
reason that we want to do this is because I've never seen it. And so I'm going to throw out some first impression
Right.
notes that I wrote down for you.
Yeah.
And feel free to comment
Please.
where you feel the need. First of all,
Okay.
music. I love
Okay.
how they transition the score from like
Yeah.
classic 70s porno vibes into this like crazy, like I thought it was going to be like that the whole time. And then it turns into this crazy eclectic pop
Yeah.
culture thing.
Yep.
Yeah,
Oh,
crazy and
my God.
amazing,
Yes.
amazing job on the music.
Completely agree.
Like we
Yeah.
said, we commented on the cast of characters. And then I just think this is a weirdly like endearing movie. The end made me like, I mean, obviously the final
Yeah.
shot is literally just a giant dick. I mean, it is a giant cock. But
Yeah.
that final sequence,
Incredible.
you know, when they're at Jack's house and, you know, you're kind of seeing how all the
Right.
characters have progressed over the years. And, you know, they're getting ready to shoot a fucking porno, you know, but they're, yeah,
Yep.
trashy one.
And a
But
trashy
there's
one at
something
that
so
point.
like
Yeah.
heartwarming about Jack and Amber as like the mom and dad of this weird porno family and all these people that were kind of rejected along the way. It's
Right.
an island of misfit toys kind of vibe. And it's so
Yes.
heartwarming. And I think that
Yep.
really like was what resonated with me. I wasn't expecting it, you know, like kind of a third of the way through the movie. And I think the scene where it really hit home for me was, you know, when Roller Girl and Amber are doing coke in the bedroom and she's like, "You're my mom," you know, and it's kind of like they're banging you over the head with it finally. Yeah. And
Like, aren't
it's
you like
really
my
funny and really
mom?
weird because it's like, you know, Amber refers to Dirk
Yeah.
as like her little baby, but they're fucking the whole time because they're, you know, they're in these corners together. So it's really,
Right. And she keeps saying, "I love you," and it's very
yeah,
unclear
as like a
whether she
mother,
means like
yeah.
sexually or yeah, like as a mother, like I'm in love with you versus like I love you because I want to take care of you. It's
Yeah, I also thought it
very
was just a super
nuanced
interesting
in that
portrait
way.
of like how far one people will go for belonging. And two, how like
Right.
de-sensualized sex can become. Like I thought that was like a su that was something that stuck out to me like
Yes.
really, really like hardcore was just the fact that it was like perfect example, like Jack, you know, as a director, you know, he's so focused on like the shot
Right.
of it. You know,
Yeah.
it's not even remotely sexual to him, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, that's an interesting first impression because I can see why you'd think that, but at the same time, like after watching it a few times, I think he, to me, he's like
Oh,
almost
okay.
totally getting
Interesting.
off
Yeah,
on it the
see, I
whole
think.
time. It just the way he's like, you know what, why I say that? There's a scene very early on when Roller Girl, who is played by Heather Graham,
Yeah.
first has sex with Dirk, you know,
Yeah,
played
yeah,
by
yeah,
when he's
yeah.
still Eddie,
Yeah, in his
played
house.
by Mark. Yeah, and she goes, "Oh, so are we gonna fuck now?" And Burt Reynolds' character Jack says, "Oh yeah, you guys are." And she goes over, and there's an interesting, like, it's like it's not like he's watching a porno, but I think he gets off because he's think like to him, this is art. Dang. Like people having sex, and especially when he records it, it's getting him off in almost like a professional.
Yeah, it's
way.
Like giving him that like, satisfaction, you know, that like you like get from like yeah. that's the vibe I got. But at the same time, I think that's partly going with my take that right. he's like desensualizing the sex. But in that moment,
yeah.
he's like, I've just discovered my next big star. And he's like, fuck yeah. Like, this is my ticket. This is my ticket.
Right.
Yeah. So really, I mean, God, if you couldn't tell, I think this is a wonderful movie. I love this. I love this movie. So
wonderful.
That being said, let's get in to our categories. Yeah. So what we're going to do, what we decided to do on these, you know, single movie pods, is we're going to have a couple categories, you know, little favorites, but more collective, you know, not really top fives like we do in the bigger shows. So we're going to run through a couple different things. Favorite performance, favorite shots from the movie, favorite scenes, and our favorite lines. And then a couple of other fun categories at the end. So first of all, Evan, let's dive into probably going to be the hardest category given this incredible ensemble cast. What is our favorite performance? Let's each throw out a couple nominations, and then we can talk it
two
over.
Or three.
Okay. Yeah. So,
okay.
I think the obvious two that I think we should put outside of our other three, the obvious two are Wahlberg and Reynolds, right? Those are like because they're kind of, I would say, the stars of the movie. So those two are already, they're already in our... Them. No, they're already in the vote, but like without our two or three.
Oh.
You understand what I'm saying?
By default. Yeah, just by matter of screen time. Okay.
So my two nominations.
Okay.
Man, that's tough. All right. My two nominations are going to be Julianne Moore as Amber Waves.
Okay. Wonderful.
And then I think it's John C. Reilly. I think that those are my two noms. So...
Those are you two. Okay. So I'm only just going to give, anyone who you did mention already. Okay. I mean, those are wonderful. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I'm going to give three. I'm going to give us five.
We'll have seven.
So
because of,
Well, then we'll have seven. And I have my choice, too. But So Philip Seymour Hoffman. Hard to think about this movie without thinking about Philip Seymour Hoffman. Heather Graham. Good Lord, Heather Graham. I hope by the end of this podcast, the one thing I hope is that we do Heather Graham justice and we talk about her enough because she's so fucking incredible.
She really goes after it. Especially what I love about this movie.
She goes after it and
what I love
iconic character.
Yeah, like what I love about this movie is it gives every single one of the characters like their moment. To like every actor gets a chance to like be like they do something where you're like, oh shit. Like that's a good actor. So anyway, all right. Heather Graham, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Heather Graham, Philip Seymour Hoffman, William H. Macy. Oh, my Lord, William H. Macy. And I feel terrible. You know, I want to toss it like Alfred
and Molina. Also, dude, Don Cheadle, so good.
Don Cheadle.
But those are going to be the ones that just miss the cut, right?
Right. Just miss the cut. We got to cut it somewhere. You can't talk about that movie without the people that we mentioned. I mean, Don Cheadle, incredible. Alfred Molina, we'll talk about him more. I promise. I got him in another category. Good Lord. Some of the best, maybe 7 minutes of screen time anyone's ever given. Cast is incredible. So out of that group,
all right,
hit me with your favorite.
So we've got Reynolds. We've got Wahlberg. We've got Moore.
Yeah.
Philip Seymour Hoffman. We've got, John C. Reilly and William H. Macy. Sorry, Heather Graham. Heather Graham. Sorry.
Heather Graham.
Yes.
As well.
Yeah. Heather Graham, William H. Macy. That's our seven.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
I think the person that's doing the best acting, like, I think
who's
the,
your
so
favorite?
I'm going to, okay. You can, whoever your favorite is, right? But I've decided that's how I'm going to judge it this time.
Yeah.
You can judge it based on whatever category. It's very subjective. I think it's Julianne.
Gotcha.
So I think she is the emotional center of the movie. She's doing a lot in a lot of different things. You know, she's being this motherly character. She's kind of being this like, sexy cougar type person. She's also being this crazy drugged out porn star. And she's doing all of it so seamlessly, and she's freaking flexing a lot of muscles. And like you said, maybe there she was, maybe those coke scenes were too real, or there might have been something. But regardless, even if there was one shot that wasn't, her ability to make it look like she has just done a shit ton of blow is fucking incredible. Nobody has that glazed over face like she does. So that is my pick. Yep.
Wow. Great pick. She is, I mean, Julianne Moore got nominated for an Oscar for this role.
As she should have.
She's freaking incredible in this movie. I should also mention Burt Reynolds also got nominated for Best Supporting Actor. So, wow, great pick. Yes, Julianne Moore, incredible in this movie. And that scene, I didn't pick it for my best scene, but that scene that you described with Roller Girl, who's played by Heather Graham, where, you know, Roller Girl is asking if Julianne Moore is like her mom, is one of the best scenes in the movie. It's one of the realest scenes in the movie. It's one of the reasons this movie can't be regarded as, you know, quote unquote high art.
100%, 100% agree. Well. So, all right. So R2, that being said, who's your pick?
So my pick, I think to me, definitely my favorite performance. I honestly think the best acting in the movie, in my opinion, after having watched it, because I've gone back and forth on this.
I've
had different people.
Yes.
It's John C. Reilly.
He is so fucking good in this movie. Like,
so, yes. John C. Reilly, he, first of all, as we grew up with John C. Reilly and Will Ferrell movies, right? Gets the comedy, but John C. Reilly comes from a traditional acting background. He did stage theater, he's done drama. He gets the comedy. He is so fucking funny in this movie, and at the same time, he is the living embodiment of this movie, because what this movie is showing is how serious these people are taking something
that's
so absurd. Like, it, right? Like, the whole point of the movie, kind of, as far as, like, the work that they do, is, like, it is so absurd that they are taking things so seriously to make pornos. Like we see with William H. Macy's character, like, they're in the middle of a party, and he and the production assistant are talking about, like, what camera they're going to use and stuff like that. It's like, who cares? You guys are shooting porn tomorrow. Dude,
I fucking love that pick. John C. Reilly in this movie is so, so good. He's incredible. We'll get into this in scenes, but like that scene where Dirk and him meet for the first time, and they're just like, you know, he's making the margarita, and it's like,
oh my God,
how much do you bench? How much do you squat? It's like, cracks me up. It's like the new kid on the block. He's sizing him up. Oh God, so good.
Dude, and I will say one John C. Reilly comment that I have to make. When Dirk Diggler is recording in the studio and it flashes to John C. Reilly dancing behind the glass behind the producer, like, legitimately one of the funniest scenes I've ever seen in a movie.
I also love when they're sitting there and they're just like, you could tell they're so into their music and they're like, feel my heat. Oh, no, let's repeat that again.
Yeah, he was like, he's like, you know what?
Yeah.
We can toss in another deal. And you know, hey, good note on that weird song that they're creating there. John C. Reilly wrote that.
That's fucking Thomas awesome. Anderson, that's a good little Easter egg. Oh, all right, we got to make a decision.
Yeah,
our two final nominees, Julianne Moore and John C. Reilly. Evan, who's going to concede here?
I don't know. So who, when you walk away from this movie and you're like, who made me feel something? Whether it was good, bad,
I'm tempted to just say Julianne Moore because, like I said, I think she's the emotional center. But I walked away from this movie. Yeah. Literally, my note is John C. Reilly is fucking incredible. So I think I'm going to go with yours. So John C. Reilly. Okay. That's literally the only note that I wrote down. And, you know, John C. Reilly.
Right.
in parentheses, fucking incredible. So, all right, our favorite performance of Boogie Nights.
I love that.
John C. Reilly. All right, now we are going to get to our second category, our favorite shots. So by shots, we mean it can either be like a single frame. It could be – it's just camera work. Right. Like, you know, a lot of these single movies we're going to talk about, like a lot of the things that, you know, most people – you know, it's this, it's the next layer behind just like watching the movie is when you see these beautiful shots and you really start to appreciate them.
And to just give a little bit more context to – and anyone who's seen Boogie Nights, especially a couple of times – because we're people who now, you know, we'll get a little pretentious. We kind of look out for this stuff. Like, what are they doing with the camera?
Yep.
You know, why is he doing that? But I didn't for the longest time, and I don't think you didn't either. So, you know, unless you're paying attention, if you've seen this movie multiple times, though, you will know Paul Thomas Anderson has, like, five or six insane tracking shots in this movie. And that's why we wanted to do this category. And what that means is they go through almost an entire scene without any cuts.
The camera, you know what a tracking shot is if you've seen it. The camera is following around. Right. It feels like you're in the moment with the characters, right? It's not cutting back and forth. It's not panning really at all. It's kind of slow moving through this environment. Yeah, it's a great way to immerse the audience in an environment. Yep. And there are some top of all time. So
incredible.
Let's get those ones out of the way. I think there's two that stick out to me that need to be on the nomination. Tracking shot. The opening tracking shot. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. First three and a half minutes of the movie, that opening tracking shot, them showing us the club, Maurice's club.
Yep. Played to Best of My Love by The Emotions.
Incredible. And then I think the second tracking shot that really, really is incredible. Is at the pool party when Jack, when that camera follows that girl into the pool. That was when I was like, fuck, dude, Paul Thomas Anderson is just a god.
Yes, that shot goes through. Well, we'll talk about that a little bit later. Well, I will talk about that a little bit later.
All right, so hit me with
that shot goes through like four different conversations, goes underwater. And then comes out a whole other conversation.
Those two tracking shots are on the board. So hit me with two more nominees.
Two more nominees for favorite shots. Okay. The third one that I'll say, it's another tracking shot. We're tracking shot whores out here for sure. It's when William H. Macy ends up blowing his brains out.
Yeah.
The camera starts. So that's a 3-minute scene. It starts with William H. Macy outside. He walks inside. He meets two different people. He has conversations with them. John C. Reilly says, "Little Bill, why aren't you smiling?" Smile. It's about to be the new year. Luis Guzman. Oh, no. Don Cheadle actually walks past him, hands him a glass of champagne. He walks into the bedroom. There's an ongoing bit throughout the movie in which William H. Macy finds his wife banging another man three separate times in this movie. He walks into a room. Sees his wife in there having sex with another man, walks outside, loads his gun in his car, gets out of his car, locks his car, walks inside, kills both his wife and the man she's sleeping with, and then kills himself. And it's 3 minutes straight through, follows him through the entire house.
That's a great one.
Great scene. Yeah. And then, you know, the final shot that I'll bring up
is Dirk's dick, right? The final shot of the movie.
So that'll be the fifth for sure. So Dirk's dick has to be in there because we'll talk about that a little bit later too. Prosthetic work, incredible. It's a big dick. But the last one that I'll bring up, and there's a few different ones to pick from, but I want to talk about the final or not the final scene, but the freaking song called? Oh, the Sister Christian and Jesse's Girl scene when Alfred Molina, when they go to do the drug drop off, when the three of them looking out at Alfred Molina and it's him sitting there wearing his like underwear with the kimono open with the kid behind him throwing the firecrackers. And just the way that's centered is so, it's beautiful while also being haunting. Okay. I love that scene so much.
Just a couple notes on the one PTA loves these tracking shots and every shot that is still has something going on in the background. Like you said, Alfred Molina in the background, the kid throwing firecrackers. Right. So my two of my favorite shots that are still one, Wahlberg and Reynolds talking in the house like in his house while Roller Girl is in the background looking for limes. That scene is so incredibly well lit. And it's so cool because it's like frame, like literally it's like, it's so hard. It draws your attention to Roller Girl in the background because it's framed by Wahlberg and Reynolds sitting in the foreground. Right. So that's
incredible house.
Yeah. Really good. We haven't even mentioned great all time 70s house.
Reynolds
house. And then I think my last still shot is when Dirk accepts his first adult film Best Actors Award and he's holding it up and he's doing the dance and like, you can only see a silhouette because the spotlight, it's like that. It's a famous, you know, it's a kind of a tropey shot. Yeah, exactly. But I love that shot. So we've got the opening tracking shot, the pool tracking shot, the blow your brains out tracking shot. We've got the Alfred Molina drug deal shot. We have got the talking in the house with Roller Girl in the background shot. And then finally we've got Dirk accept his Best Actor Award shot in the big dick, I think there's only one option. I think there's only one option for this, And I think it's the opening tracking shot because it sets the tone. It sets the tone for the entire movie. You kind of like are kind of immersed in this like 70s, you know, culture and this like, this like fake lavish lifestyle that these people live. Cause like in reality, like, we talked about the house. It's a great house, but it's just like a nice suburban house. It's not like an like a famous actor or a famous like Hollywood director's house. You know what I mean? It's upscale. It's upscale.
I do know what you mean. It's in LA.
Yeah,
though.
It's upscale, but it's in like a like a reasonable way. Like I jokingly referred to
Pool.
Yeah, I refer to Reynolds as a bargain basement Hugh Hefner, like his character in this, and so. Like that kind of like that fits the whole thing. And it kind of gives us this, you know, they're in a trashy nightclub, but they're getting the bottle service at the trashy nightclub and they're getting the food sent over them at the trashy nightclub, you know, and they're celebrities in their own world. You know, it's very much big fish, small pond. Yeah. And so I love that it sets that tone. Really early on.
Oh my God. And it just, it gets you into the world and you know, Paul Thomas Anderson is not shy about, and people are not shy about talking about Paul Thomas Anderson making, when he made this movie, that opening scene, he said, I want to make a shot better than like what he, I believe he describes as his favorite shot is the Copacabana scene in Goodfellas. That's when Ray Liotta, and Karen, I can't remember the actress's name, but she plays the character Karen, his wife, walk into the Copacabana. It's the most, one of the most famous tracking shots ever. They walk through the entire gin, you know, back of the restaurant. He made this shot at the beginning of Boogie Nights, PTA did. And good Lord, it is so good. The way it starts on the Boogie Nights name in all neon and then swings out. We're at the car. And then, you know, this is a great time. We didn't mention him before.
Yeah.
Luis Guzman is a part of two of the best tracking shots, both this and the pool shot. Freaking
great.
Incredible. The way he greets and more. Hey, I'm sorry for saying this, bro. The sexiest bitch in the valley.
I think this is just a, this is, I think more movies should start with these types of shots because it really just, like I said, it's world building. It's immersing you in that moment. Like it's a 3 minute way to say, here's the time and place we're in. Without saying a word.
And here's the people, you know what this shot does too? Is it's like you want to find out more about these people. Like he, you know, Luis Guzman goes up and Don Cheadle goes, hey, it's a cowboy, you see it? And he's wearing this outfit. And so you're kind of left wondering, like, why the fuck is this guy wearing a cowboy outfit right now? You know, there's a lot of it world builds in that it's like, I want to find out more about these people. And then we have to mention the shot ends with Mark Wahlberg coming out. First of all, Roller Girl comes by. I love how she's like, Julianne Moore's like, what do you have going on down there? She keeps like touching her crotch. Yeah. She's like, I have to pee. She's
Like, well, go ahead do that.
And she goes by, and then the shot ends with Mark Wahlberg stepping into the scene, and then flashes to Burt Reynolds seeing him. That's beginning all right. Of, beginning of the end.
Yeah. But what a shot. What a shot. What a picture.
What a picture. It's the first thing you texted each other after we saw this movie.
Finished Boogie Nights, and then I just said, What a picture.
Yes. And you know what I will say? Speaking of Al Pacino, we got to give our guy a shout on every on every episode. I've noticed this before, but this time I really noticed one of the only movie posters that's fully present in Mark Wahlberg's room at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
Al Pacino's Serpico.
Yeah, that's great.
You gotta love it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So moving on. So we decided that our favorite shot is that opening track shot, which I think is very good. So yeah. Now this is another really tough one. Opening or favorite scene. So favorite scene.
Good Lord.
I want to start this off in a weird way. I want to talk about my least favorite scene really quick. So my least favorite scene is the fight between Eddie and his mom. And I think that's from an entirely different movie. It kind of took me out of it.
Interesting.
Like, I get what they're trying to do is show that the reason that he wanted to go is because he kind of has a torn apart family. But I think they showed it from like the coldness that she showed at the breakfast scene. I didn't think they needed to do this whole like crazy fight between, you know, Wahlberg and his mom and just stop doing that. Stop doing that. You know, as she I'm going to be a big star. I mean, it's fine, but it's
it just felt like a different
movie to me. So that was my least favorite, but couple of good ones. And I think we can't really limit ourselves on this. I think they'll identify themselves.
So really quick, can I comment on that scene really quick?
Okay.
So I kind of agree. It's not one of my favorite scenes either. And I think for somebody who wrote as big a script as PTA did and has put as much thought into this movie as he clearly did, it's definitely a personal movie to him.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like the most thrown together shot. There's so much nuance in like how scenes create character development and character emotion. And I agree with you that this is like, we just need a reason for him to get out of the house and want to do something else. And so I don't think they necessarily needed to be this heavy handed, you know, as that. So I'm with you there. I'm with you. But yeah, go ahead. Let's get into our best or favorite scenes.
All right. Favorite scenes. And I say favorite scenes and also sequences because they can cover like a couple of scenes that happen at like the same time.
Right.
So opening exchange between Wahlberg and Reynolds. You want five or $10. Phenomenal.
Yeah.
One of my favorite scenes, I think, in any movie ever is Don Cheadle working at the radio store.
Oh my god!
I have this unit in my very home. Like,
it is hi-fi, which means it's the highest possible
fidelity. Highest possible fidelity. But if you don't get that TK-241 modification, he goes, "Listen, you're not gonna get that same fidelity." And then he just, like, pops in the country music.
Yeah,
and he's like, "You hear the bass? Hear the bass?" And I was in fucking stitches. That is a all-time scene. And then please keep me posted if I'm missing any. I think Wahlberg, John C. Reilly first exchange at the pool party.
Oh my god. Leading into the pool party itself, because that leads into you know, Don Cheadle's conversation, the whole I need a new look, you know, you need a new look. What look for you, chocolate love. Chocolate love never goes out of style, baby.
The Brock Landers credits.
Yes. Brock Landers, incredible
comedy,
yeah,
dude, so funny. The like all the fake gun, it's just so bad. That whole New Year's Eve sequence, like the whole party before Little Bill does the murder suicide. I think the whole scene with selling the fake coke to Rahad and Alfred Molina.
Oh my god, leading to the shootout.
And then I think the final scene at the house. I think where you kind of understand what the whole movie's about. It's about the family, and it's about this like little family. And I think what's really interesting is this is a movie that like it wasn't very clear exactly what it was about until the very end. And then you're like, you're like, this is about this as like a tiny little family. Anything I missed? Any scene?
So I have three that I want to add, and we're gonna. I mean, the whole movie is rewatchable. So you know, and the whole movie is. You can just return to time and time again, all these scenes. But three that I wanted to mention, a couple are more personal. One, that scene that you referenced earlier with Julianne Moore Burt Reynolds, Heather Gerg, all going out for the first to the club to a diner and then going back to his house, leading Roller Girl having sex.
Yeah, so once Roller Girl blows Wahlberg, and then they pull over to the side, and she's like, "Hey, remember me?" And he's like, "Yeah, I remember you." Yes. And then
I remember you. She's like, "Remember me from a couple hours ago?" And as if she needed to clarify, like, "Oh, do you mean 2 hours ago? Because 4 hours ago,
so I don't remember good."
You. He was like, "Yeah." And I love, and Bert later he goes, "Would you like to have sex with the Roller Girl?"
Of course,
like,
yeah, oh, she's foxy.
Absolutely, would she?
Foxy as hell.
So that one, I also have Philip Seymour Hoffman and Mark Wahlberg when Philip Seymour Hoffman shows him his car. Man, and he tries to kiss Mark Wahlberg. That's one of the, you know, it's such a great scene, and it's why Philip Seymour Hoffman is one of the best actors of all time. And it's so sad. It's
the
just
lead
so
up, but
sad
the lead
to,
up to that scene.
And he's going, You're an idiot.
Yeah, but the lead up to that scene is like also incredible.
Yeah.
I really like your name. It's super cool. Really like, and then he's like chewing on the pen the whole time as they're like walking down the hallway, and you can totally see that he's gay and is like into Diggler.
So that's exactly what I was going to say. So that scene leading, that was a couple scenes before the first porno shoot. That scene was incredible. When Mark Wahlberg, it's the worst acting Julianne Moore has ever done in her career, and it's because it's supposed to be terrible. When she's like, "Let me see what you got in these pants," and she just takes his pants, she goes, "It's a big cock."
It's a big cock, dude. This is so funny. But it also has one of like the, it's like one of the most iconic Burt Reynolds scenes ever, and it's just that slow zoom into his face. And he's smoking the cigar, and you hear them in the background, and they both climax, and then he goes, "Beautiful." And then it gets interrupted because they're like, "We didn't get the cum shot."
Yeah.
And he's like, "What?" And he goes, "He came inside her. He didn't get the cum shot." And then Dirk turns around and goes, "Jack, I can go again if we need to get the shot." And that's when like, that's essentially him like being like, "I'm a fucking star." Like he's
like, "I'm a star. That's what it takes to be a star in the porn." You know what I love about that scene too is after they finish having sex, everyone comes in like congratulating. Yeah. They're like, "Oh, what a job!" You know, John C. Reilly.
He like, fucks hey, like Dirk, a champ. Man. So good.
John C. Reilly's character is wearing like the towel wrapped around the waist. He's like already had a scene.
Yeah. Oh, so good. Okay.
Goodness.
I think
so gorgeous. So what is
one more scene has to be put out there. And it is the hot tub scene where they come up with the name Dirk Diggler. And it's the poet, it's John C. Reilly's poem. And then leading in and Wahlberg's monologue where he's like, "I just see my name up in this like bright blue neon. It's surrounded by purple. And it's just so bright that it freaking explodes. And it just says Dirk Diggler. That's the name." And he goes, and Horner smokes the cigar and goes, "Well, Dirk Diggler, I think you were sent to us from heaven. I think you were an angel sent from heaven."
Oh, my God. Burt Reynolds, God. Mark Wahlberg. Hey, we will talk about this maybe a little bit later. I don't know. Let's talk about favorite scene. We got to do Wahlberg at some point for a minute.
We'll do a quick in between after we decide the favorite scene, let's do a quick Wahlberg. Okay. All right. Okay. So what's your favorite? Just lay it out there. I knew we threw a ton out, but there's a lot of great scenes.
So my favorite scene, my favorite scene is after watching it a bunch. It's kind of a double scene. I'm cheating a little bit. It's the first time John C. Reilly and Mark Wahlberg meet, the whole conversation. "Have you ever seen Star Wars? People tell me I look like Han Solo." One of the funniest lines John C. Reilly has ever delivered. And then, as you mentioned before, what do you bench? "You tell me first." Okay, we both say it on three. One, two, three. Hey, you didn't say
the
anything.
The best part about that sequence is before is Riley's like, "Oh, yeah, you're in good shape. You squat?" And he's like, "Yeah, I squat." He goes, "What do you squat?" And Wahlberg goes, "200. And he goes, "Not bad, not bad." He goes, "Do you squat?" He goes, "Yeah, 350. And just like totally stunts on him. It's so
That's why later Wahlberg, when John C. Reilly asked what he benches, Wahlberg's like, "Well, you tell me first." And John C. Reilly's like, "Hey,
I just love it because he's just totally sizing him up. He's like the new kid on the block." And then that scene's kind of mirrored in like the exact opposite way that interaction could have gone, when Horner brings on that new kid and Wahlberg just totally is defensive. So it's really
he's not a star. He's not an actor.
All right.
So that leads into my favorite scene, that leading into the whole one shot that we talked about in the pool. That I have to mention, that scene opens with the Colonel, who bankrolls all these movies, hopping out of his car with the young girl, and the young girl walking up, and Jack Horner, played by Burt Reynolds, walks up and he's like, "Hey, great to meet you." And she goes, "Hi, do you have any coke at this party?"
So good.
Like, first thing that she says, he's like, "Oh, I think you could probably find yourself."
And then they find her later. She's OD'd, and that's not funny. But the guy's like, "Oh God, this is the third girl to OD on me this week." And they're like, "Do you think you need some new stuff?" No,
Girl in two days, so bad, dude.
Oh my god! All right,
These people are going crazy in the valley.
It's just that pool sequence, that whole pool party sequence.
Yeah, the pool sequence. I have to mention, the song being played is so perfect. It's "Spill the Wine" by Eric Burdon and The War. And you know, really quick, wanted to mention why it's my favorite scene. Just like in Goodfellas, it's world building. You're watching the conversation with Don Cheadle. Then after that, it's Luis Guzman and Julianne Moore. Then you're watching two people do coke. Then you're watching people get into the pool. And then we didn't mention, but Mark Wahlberg says, "I'm going to do a jackknife," and does it into the pool. And then John C. Reilly goes, "Here, I'm going to show you what you did different." And that's how the scene ends. It's just like you feel like are there. You feel like you are a member at that pool party. But that's
I think you're right. I think that is the scene. I think my favorite scene, though, is the Cheeto radio store scene, because nothing made me laugh harder. And it's early on in the movie, and it like really settled me down. Like, I was trying to figure out what kind of movie this was going to be. And that just gave me a laugh and like kind of just let me be. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes I weirdly come into movies like, I don't want to say defensively, but like I come in like like a detective. I'm like, "Ooh, like, what do I need to be looking out for?" That scene just settles me down. So I think I agree. It's probably that whole pool sequence. But dude, it's literally just Don Cheadle rambling for 5 minutes about radios. And I also just love that it's like that's his passion throughout the whole thing. It's like, "Hi-fi. This means this is the highest fidelity sound that you can get. But if you do not get that TK-241, he goes, it's not going to sound like this. Like, the bass is not going to be there."
I love how he goes like, "This is technical
jargon. You don't need to worry about that."
So two things with favorite scene. We're going with the pool scene. I love that. I do love that scene that you're talking about. Two things. One, we're probably crazy for not picking the opening scene because it's one of the most iconic scenes.
Especially
like,
the exchange between Reynolds and Wahlberg
leading into that. Yeah. Yes, 100%. And I have talk about,
we'll do that little
snapshot. We're going to talk about
that.
We're getting there. Number two, we're probably crazy for not mentioning the Don Cheadle donut scene.
Yes. That scene is nuts.
And that, when it was coming out, that's when, you know, people were saying, because this, as we've talked a lot about, our good friend, Tarantino, was really, I mean, this is at the peak of his, like, he had just come out with Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, Jackie Brown, and he was the heater. And that scene in the donut shop was when people were like, "This guy does like Paul Thomas Anderson is like
So there's Tarantino's counterpart." It was really interesting. It was really interesting. Those those three scenes in a row, the drug scene at Rahad, you know, Rahad's house. Mark Wahlberg getting beat up for jerking it, you know, by all those guys, and then that Don Cheadle scene in the donut shop.
Yeah,
those were like, it was like, did Tarantino direct this part of the movie?
Dude, literally. It looked like Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Or
was
at least
crazy.
He wrote it.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Like, it's like true romance. So, at least.
Yeah. All right. Wow. So before we hop into our favorite quote, our favorite scene, that pool sequence, let's do each individually 30 seconds on Mark Wahlberg real quick.
Yeah. Let's do it. Okay. So Mark Wahlberg, undoubtedly. Okay, we're going to cut that.
We're leaving that in. Undoubtedly.
Okay. Undoubtedly. One of the five biggest movie stars of our lifetime. We were both born in, I was 1996. Were you 95?
96.
Yeah. Like, unequivocally one of the top five movie stars as far as like bringing in eyes. We've talked before about being the biggest movie star does not necessarily mean you're the best actor. It doesn't always equate.
Often,
right?
Often it's the opposite.
Often it does not. Yeah, right? Like, I don't think there are many people that are going to look and be like, Philip Seymour Hoffman is one of the five biggest movie stars of the 90s and 2000s.
No, but he might be the but five, I don't know how many five people, best actors.
Like, might be the best.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so definitely top five might be the best actor mm-hmm. of the 90s and 2000s. So there's differences. Mark Wahlberg is definitely filled with charisma. This is by far my favorite Mark Wahlberg performance.
It's not even close.
He is so good in this movie. He's so perfect. And you know why I say that? I told my mom this the other day. This is before Mark Wahlberg had self-awareness.
Oh, yes. I was going to say this too. Yeah. Go ahead. Finish your point because this is so real. Ended up,
so by the time, like, so everyone knows Entourage was based on Mark Wahlberg and his life, supposedly. Mark Wahlberg in 1997 wasn't aware that Mark Wahlberg was one of the biggest money drivers and one of the biggest stars in Hollywood, right? Mm-hmm. So he was just acting as Mark Wahlberg playing Dirk Diggler. In every other movie that he made, almost every other movie after that, he was Mark Wahlberg playing a character playing Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah, my second... You know,
like he was so self-aware of what he was doing in those movies, whereas in this one, he legitimately did seem like the new kid on the block, yeah. which fit the... perfectly. And one more thing I wanted to mention, and I'll give you your time. That scene with Alfred Molina at the end, they're throwing firecrackers. There's some great behind the scenes comments about how they didn't tell the actors when the firecrackers were coming. And Paul Thomas Anderson himself was slapping together 2x4s to create the sound, and he would just do them randomly. So they're just freaking out. And the scene where it's just focusing in on Mark Wahlberg's face before he finally says, like, all right, guys, we got to get out of here. By far the best acting I've ever seen from Mark Wahlberg, yeah. Mark Wahlberg in his career. And I have, so I love him in this movie. He's so great. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I think I agree with you. It's really sad that he did become self-aware because then he adopted, right. He's like, there are types of roles that I play. I play action star Mark Wahlberg. Yeah. I play comedian Mark Wahlberg. And then yeah. I just play Mark Wahlberg. You know, it's like, right. it's yeah. I mean, I think Mark Wahlberg, I could take him or leave him. I think the closest he gets to this, like digging back into this performance, though, is in The Other Guys. Like, so much, like, there's so much similarity between him being like, "You're a you're a star, you're a fucking superstar," and that I'm a peacock. You gotta let me fly. Like that, like that whole like kind of angry, like feel like you're not living up to your potential, Mark Wahlberg. Oh, yeah. And that's my second favorite Mark Wahlberg performance is in The Other Guys. So,
oh, okay. But The Departed, I actually think he's really good in The Departed.
Yeah, yeah, you're right, you're right. I actually think that's probably, you're right. I always forget about The Departed because he's actually very good in that. I forget it's Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah, but Scorsese is awesome because he's like, I'm only going to put you in like 3 or 4 scenes. That's it.
Yeah.
He's and, you're not going to be a star. Just fucking do your job. And I love that.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And like, it's also, I think it's easier to, like, you're not thinking about his performance as much because you've got Leo and Damon and Nicholson on the year. It's just like murderers row. We should do a Departed pod because that movie's fucking incredible.
Movie rips, and you know there's a lot to dissect in it
too. There is a lot to dissect in that movie.
Bad movie. I gotta love that.
Yeah. All right. That was our little Mark Wahlberg rant. Love the guy. Wish he
you
did
can't
more
not
shit
talk
like
about him, right? I mean, Dirk Diggler, he played one of the most iconic characters of the entire 90s. I mean, coming out of the 90s, who is referenced more than Dirk Diggler? You know, you hear
Tyler Durden, and that's it.
Yeah, you listen to songs, and hey, we already talked about him with David Fincher. We're just all over it. We're all over 90s pop culture right now. Okay.
Yeah, we love it. All right. Now let's get into our favorite quotes.
Oh, my Lord.
Before we get into our final two segments of the day. So, a couple that I'm going to nominate here.
Okay.
Everyone is blessed with that one special thing.
Yep. That's what the movie comes down to, right?
Yep.
Here, go ahead and say who it's
from.
Go ahead and say who it's from.
Okay. Yeah, that's from Dirk Diggler. Yes. That's when he's still Eddie and he's banging his high school girlfriend.
Yeah.
Don Cheadle, I have this very unit in my home. Makes me laugh so fucking hard.
Yes.
Burt Reynolds. Oh, sorry. No, this isn't Burt Reynolds. This is the Colonel, I think. I like simple things like butter in my ass and lollipops in my mouth. That's actually not the Colonel. Who is the other financier?
He's played by Philip Baker Hall.
He's a producer. I like simple things like butter in my ass and lollipops in my mouth. Fucking incredible. And then my final nominee.
What did he say right after that, though? What does he say? Oh, you think that makes me a pervert?
Yeah, he goes, was that make me weird? Was that make me a pervert? Because he's trying to get – his role is like – he's like, oh, I realize that the future of pornography is in home video, not in expensive like film and putting them on the movie theaters. And the final one I have is can I kiss you? Can I kiss you on the mouth? Philip Seymour Hoffman when he tries to kiss Mark Wahlberg. Yeah. Oh, dude, it's so good. And there's one big one that I'm missing, but I know you're gonna have it. So
I have a couple for sure. Okay. Yeah. One that's just hilarious is the guy who I don't want to say it's hilarious in that it's hilarious in that the scene is happening. I just mean it's hilarious in the context of the movie. But when the girl is ODing in the bedroom and the guy goes, I think she did too much coke. And the colonel goes, oh, you think so, doctor?
Yeah, exactly. So
she's
good.
Like laying
so
on the ground with blood pouring out of her nose. You know, one that I have to mention is Amber. You know, that whole that is a giant cock when they're doing the first scene. Unbelievable. Another that I have to mention, the Dirk Diggler when he's in the mirror and he goes, I know fucking karate, and he keeps doing these like karate moves in the mirror. Such a great Raging Bull flashback. It's kind of Taxi Driver too. We're talking about Martin Scorsese and Robert De Niro. Wonderful movies about guys trying to, you know, really figure out themselves, and Raging Bull obviously being a terrible person, Taxi Driver pretty much the same way. But my favorite quote, and I think this is, we can lead into my favorite quote here, right? The last quote that I say.
Yeah, yeah.
Your favorite. So my favorite is very early on. It's the first time that Jack, played by Burt Reynolds, and
I think this is going to be the quote that wins it. This is like the quote of the movie.
Yes. It seems to me beneath those jeans, there's something wonderful just waiting to get out.
Yeah, that is it. Yeah, I got a feeling that beneath those jeans, there's just something wonderful waiting to get out.
Right?
Like, is in all time.
That's the culmination of the movie. That's the culmination of, we are going to take very seriously this very not serious thing.
Yep. Yeah.
Right? Because he's saying that with sincerity. He's not saying that as a joke. He, in the movie, it obviously plays for laughs. But he's saying that fucking seriously.
Yeah,
he's
I agree.
This is our lives.
So I agree. And lastly, I just want to talk about so that was our favorite quote, right?
Yeah, right.
I think that's the best quote of the movie.
It sums up the movie.
Yeah, it sums up the movie. I agree. Yeah. So real quick, that segues in. Let's just talk about Dirk's dick for a second.
Yeah.
Because this is a phenomenon of like the whole movie. And I love that every time like somebody sees it for the first time. Yes. They do this like close up on their face and they're like, ooh, you know, they're clearly very impressed or like, holy shit. And like, you don't think you're ever going to see it. And I love that the final shot of the movie is just his big old fucking cock.
Literally,
and like, it weirdly makes no sense. He's like, you're a star. You're a fucking star. And then he pulls out his flaccid penis and then puts it back in his pants. It's like so weird, but it works so well.
Yeah. And they've set it up so well because we see about three different scenes earlier on in the movie where he does that similar sort of thing where he's hyping himself up in the mirror. And I like to think that he's done that every time.
We just cut away from it for him.
Right. Yeah, like, he's doing it beneath the camera. So I like the idea. And, you know, I love that. And it's something that Quentin Tarantino does so well in his movies too. But the entire movie really can be boiled down to like, people are obsessed with how big Dirk Diggler's dick is. Right. Like that's basically the entire movie. That's why everything happens. That's why everything happens to those characters other than, you know, Julianne Moore, Heather Graham is a roller girl. They're going to be doing coke no matter what. But as far as like the plot of the story goes, everything happens because of that. And I love that final scene just showing like it's literally just a flaccid piece of meat. Like that is a piece of this man's body. Like that is all it is. There is no, you know, so many of these movies, it's like it's all centered around, you know, like, how are we going to make it to heaven? Or it's like, nope, this entire movie happened because this kid has a big dick. And you finally see it at the very end.
So funny.
I love that so much. And I think that line completely sums it up early on in the movie because it's Burt Reynolds who is, you know, very serious throughout the movie. He is, his character is serious about his craft. I love the fact that he says, oh goodness gracious. I definitely have the note in here. He says, I want to make a movie that is true, that is right, and that is dramatic.
Yeah.
That's an incredible thing to say
about
for a guy who just walked into the back room of a nightclub and told a 17-year-old that he's got something wonderful in his pants that, and that he's sent from heaven to do a certain thing. You know, that's a wild thing to say, but I just love the seriousness that they take. And that's why somebody like Paul Thomas Anderson is, you know, genius, right?
And hey, Jack, could you call me Dirk from now on?
God. That might have been the best.
Jesus Christ. We might have to go back. Line. That might be the best line because he's so, because he keeps calling him Eddie.
That's him getting into it. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's in the first porno scene that we talked about in favorites. Yeah.
That's such a good line. This movie is just filled with one-liners. All right. So those were the categories. Boogie Nights, incredible movie. Final two things that we're going to do on every single single movie podcast that we do. We're going to grade it. But before we grade it, we're going to do one more thing. And that's, did Rach like it? And Rachel is my beautiful fiance.
Right.
And she watches every movie with me because that's just what we do at night. That's how we decompress. Yeah. We watch movies. She is a diehard rom-com fan. It takes a lot for her to let me put on movies like Boogie Nights or other movies that I'm like, let's watch. She wants to be comfortable watching movies. She wants to know it's going to be something that she's going to enjoy. So it's really, if she liked it, you know, that means that it's a really good movie.
Right.
And you know, not that she doesn't have good taste in movies. She does. I don't want to slander her. She just, if she's given it a chance, it means it means it must be good. And she puts a lot of trust in me letting me watch these types of movies.
Yeah.
So did Rach like it? I'm going to give this one a soft maybe because because she laughed the entire time. Right. She was like engaged in the movie. You know, you can tell when, you know, when someone's not engaged or on their phone. She was engaged. Right. She was watching. She was laughing. But the final thing she said, the dick scene fades out into the credits. And she goes, what a weird movie. And I think she meant it endearing.
Ooh, I love that.
Yeah, I think she meant it endearingly. Yeah. So I'm going to say maybe a soft yes or a hard maybe. Soft yes, hard maybe. Okay. Is where we're going to land on the did Rach like it scale.
Very topical too, to say hard maybe.
Yeah, I agree.
A flaccid yes and a hard maybe.
Yeah, flaccid yes, erect maybe.
Yes, yeah, right.
So poor Rach. Poor Rach. She doesn't listen to the podcast because she listens to me. She listens to me record it from the other room. So, you know, she's probably never going to know that this is an ongoing segment.
But I love that.
This is going to be hilarious.
And you know, this is a movie that I think Paul Thomas Anderson would say the same thing. If you don't, for the first time watching it, watch the final credits and go, wow, that was a weird movie. I don't think he would say you really got it.
Yeah, so I agree.
It's a good thing.
Yeah. All right. And then finally, we're going to do this with every movie that we do individually on this podcast, because I think it's important for us to keep a lexicon and keep ourselves accountable.
Right.
So, Evan, we're going to grade this movie.
Yeah.
How you would grade a movie or how you would grade anything in school. Yeah. You can go A+ to F. No S, no such thing as an F-. So, be realistic. Like, I think understanding these types of movies, right?
Right.
Like, I just want to set the stage. If it's an A, that means it's like in your top 25 favorite movies of all time. Like, if you know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? Like,
so I think A+ is like top 15.
Yeah. A+, you know, maybe A+ is top 25, you know, but I'm saying if it hits any type of A, that means you think extremely highly of this movie.
Yeah.
The B's and the B+'s are incredible movies.
Right.
You know what I mean? So like just a little bit of context, like you could, something's a C+, you'd be like, yeah, it was a great movie. You know what I mean? Like, I thought it was a really good movie, and it's a C+ or a B-, you know?
Yeah.
Like, let's be realistic about these grades, because it would be really easy for us to be like, A+, what a movie. You know what I mean? Because we're going to do movies that we like, but I want us to be realistic because I want us to be held accountable. Okay. You know, like I'm going to sit here. Ocean's 11 and Lady Bird are A+'s for me.
Yeah, of course.
You know, but
all of our top fives.
Yeah, all of our top fives are A+'s. You know, but I'm not going to sit here
those
you know.
Those are like 99 or 100 A+'s too. Yeah, you know, there's a
Exactly.
Is like, you know, that's an A plus, but it's like, hey, but you know, the 16, 17 on my list, you know.
So. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You're getting it. So with that being said, with that context of how we're going to grade things,
yeah,
what is your final grade for Boogie Nights?
It's funny that you say that. You give that whole explanation. It's fucking A plus. This is one of the top 20 movies of all time for me.
Nice.
I don't think I've seen that many movies that I'm more excited to get to the next scene because a couple of reasons. One, the actors are incredible. I could watch this movie without thinking about the camera one time and have a great time. I could also watch this movie and say, I'm only going to pay attention to the shots and how Paul Thomas Anderson is moving the camera. I'm having a great time. This is, and I know this is something I mentioned during the week to you, but similar to, well, it's not exactly like The Godfather, but it, and I know I mention that all the time, but it takes something that's very strange and makes it pop entertainment and makes it accessible to almost everyone. Like you're talking about Rachel, like watching it and giving it, you know, a flaccid yes and a hard maybe. And that's exactly what this movie does. It says like, no matter what type of movie you like, you can watch this and be like, hey, maybe even I don't get it completely, but this movie is freaking good.
Yeah.
Like, I know this. Yeah. I can see why people respect this movie, even if I don't love it.
Yep.
And I freaking love this movie. And I love Paul Thomas Anderson. I love every actor and actress in this movie. And I'm giving it an A+. I'm giving it, like I said, a 97 A+. Because I'd probably, if I made it like a top 25, this would probably be at like
22 or 20. Yeah, okay. Like 17, 18. Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. 20. All right. Wow.
What about you?
Well, high praise, high praise.
I know, I gotta say, but that was the whole thing, right? Like it was the first time I've seen it, but I talk about this movie pretty often.
Yeah, no, you do, which is why I wanted to watch it. So again, I want this grade to be taken in the context of this is the first time I've watched it. I'm gonna need to watch it a couple more times before the grade settles in.
Go ahead.
I bounced back and forth between like a B plus, A minus, and I think I've settled on A minus. Because I think this is an incredible movie. I think this is an incredible movie. It's rare that I watch a movie the very first time and I understand what it's telling me. Like this movie, like without it being like too banging it over your head. You mean like it says things, you know, like it's about family in the long run and how like families are what you make them. Yeah, yeah. Belonging. So I think A minus. I loved it. I really did. It's not going to crack my top 25 yet. You know,
like A minus would probably mean with the amount of movies that we've seen, like top 100, definitely.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I think it's a
like notable. If you know,
that's very, like very a lot notable.
People start like just making a list of like movies that I love. I guarantee you'll hit 70 and you'll be like, I haven't even thought of a ton of it. You know,
so it's so like I recently started going through like all these movies I've watched in the last, I would say like 6 months, and trying to grade all of them out as like this exercise. And I found myself giving too many good scores. And so I had to like, this is why I had to rationalize with myself.
Right.
All right. Really? What do I think? And, you know, we're looking at great movies.
Yeah.
Great movies getting, you know, B minuses. You know what I mean? Like, perfect example, Moonlight, B minus. Amazing movie. Is it in my top 100 of all time? Maybe not for me. Is it probably one of the best 100 movies of all time? That's a different argument.
Possibly.
But favorite and best are different things.
Right.
So we talked about that. Yeah. So I think this is going to be a fun thing to retroactively grade. You know what I mean? Like perfect example. My second favorite war movie of all time. The last one we did, you know, the individual podcast, The Wind That Shakes the Barley. C+.
Yeah.
Second favorite war movie of all time. Yeah, interesting. Incredible movie. I think it's a C+, right? Would you agree? That's probably where it belongs in the, you know, if you're giving Boogie Nights an A+, C+, B-.
Yeah, so does that mean like a movie like Apocalypse Now is like a C- for you?
No. Because I think it's hard.
So the grade is different than favorite.
Like the grade is the like grade's different. The grade is a confluence of favorite and best, I think, is how I – obviously, this is completely all subjective and really dumb. But that's part of why we do this, right? Like, there's a huge difference between favorite and best. Yeah. But I can't, like, I'm not going to grade Apocalypse Now lower than I grade The Wind That Shakes the Barley, even though, like, I'm going to go watch The Wind That Shakes the Barley more because it's, like, one of my favorites. Like, favorite, I think, means it means more to me.
recognizing that it's like, yeah, obviously Apocalypse Now was better made.
Yes.
And is a better movie than when
exactly,
the
right? Yeah. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's kind of, like I said, I think that's where the grades really come in. It's that confluence between, is it a, like, from a
how much do I like it versus how good is it technically and acting wise?
Yes. Exactly, right? So, like, you're looking at, like, The Godfather is an A plus.
Of course.
You know 100. What I mean? Like you can make this movie is very right. easily an A plus. Like you said, it's like that 97 score.
Right.
You know, whereas like even though maybe it's on my top five favorite movies of all time, you know, there are movies that might hit, you know, maybe a B plus. You know what I mean? So I think it's
in this movie you're saying like, you know, between B plus you're saying like 90, 91. Like this could go down as one of the, you know, 200 best movies of all time. But you're not going to say it's on the same plane as like Lady Bird.
Yeah, exactly.
Movie.
What? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Like I said, I think the best way to describe it is the confluence between best and favorite. So those are our grades.
Yeah.
And you know what? Perfect. They're fucking subject to change because.
Yeah.
Because I feel exactly grades change all the time, and you know what's weird is the more I watch movies the more I like them.
Yeah,
you know it. Okay, perfect example. My number five favorite movie of all time that I put on my list, Rounders.
Yeah,
C plus.
Okay, wow.
I love
higher. Honestly,
I love that movie. Right, it's incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
But it does things. I saw this tweet the other day where it was I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was like. Movies that I don't like, and it was like you know, it was like plot holes, you know, like saying all these things, and then it was like plot holes, bad storytelling, lack of character development, and then it was like movies I do like, and then it was like movie magic and like, you know, all these other things. It's like you know how you feel about something really informs, you know, how good it is, and it lets you get away with a lot of things. I love Rounders, and you know maybe it's a C plus even though it's on my top five favorite movies of all time,
right?
Because it does a lot of things that like it kind of cops out, right? There's, you know, a ton of narration. There's a ton of things that it does that aren't like maybe great filmmaking, but that doesn't mean it's not one of my favorites, you know? Yeah. So
I still have two of the goats just going at it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, C plus B minus. Do you understand what I'm coming with this?
Yeah, I understand perfectly. And at the same time, I don't understand at all. So I think that's the whole point. So we're good.
Yep.
Like, just like, you know, we're like, mixing it up. We're throwing out grades. You
just
guys
like PTA, baby.
Yeah, hey, exactly.
This movie's fucking weird. PTA wants you to believe that.
Yeah.
So final grade before we move on. A plus for you.
A plus
high praise. A high minus. Praise. A minus for me. I think extremely high praise for first time seeing it.
And you know, incredible. This movie is not made for one time viewing. So
no, it's not.
The fact that it's already an A minus for you. I think, you know, if we revisit this in, you know, a couple of years. I bet you'd be like, oh, I have some different thoughts. Either you'd be like, now that I've thought about it, this movie doesn't do it. But
you watch movies,
like, this movie's fucking top.
I walked away from this movie being like, man, there was so much I did like. Yeah. Imagine all the things that I missed.
Right.
That I would like.
Exactly.
Like the lines, the one liners. Yeah. This is it's funny, it's heartwarming. It's got a lot going for it. A minus.
You know, I have to say before we move on, and we're about to wrap it up here, I know. Couple things.
Hey, Evan.
Mess up this pod by now.
You cut out. So just go to say a couple things again.
Movie and
Evan. 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 Evan.
Yes. Yeah.
You cut out really bad. So go back.
Yeah. You were frozen on my screen.
Say before we move on.
Okay. And before we move on, just a couple things that I wanted to point out based on this podcast. And, you know, I think we did an awesome job talking about the movie. A couple things that I'm just like, did we mess up by not mentioning Heather Graham more? Because Heather Graham as Roller Girl is so iconic as a character. Heather Graham is so amazing in this role. She, to me, almost has the most to do. As far as, you know, we talk about the moral of the story is kind of finding a place of belonging, right? And it's not that these people are obsessed with porn or that they love making porn. It's like, this is what I feel like gives me some satisfaction. This is mm-hmm. what gives me a sense of place and belonging within a group. And she portrays perfectly like somebody who has nothing else but to do this, but then at the same time is like in serious search of belonging and people and love, you know, in that scene that you were mentioning with her and Julianne Moore, where yeah. they spoke together, you know, she
yeah,
incredible.
Movies like this, I do feel bad for not mentioning people like Heather Graham because she did have an incredible performance. Mm-hmm. When it comes down to it, it's like, man, we can only do so long on right. this movie. And you know what? And it's like, I would love for somebody like I think the best case scenario of this podcast is somebody watches Boogie Nights, maybe that's seen it or hasn't seen it, and comes away and be like, what? You guys didn't think Heather Graham's performance was the yeah. best? Like right. we want people to have different opinions. Like that's the point. Yeah. That's the point of art. Like, you know, like yeah. We're not always going to agree. Like we force ourselves to come to a consensus in this yeah. for podcasting sake. But right. like, if I really had to back down, Julianne Moore's performance is fucking better than John C. Reilly's. If I had to like defend my own take,
right.
You know, so I like, you know, it's good. It's good. We want people to go explore. Like, yeah. I think I agree with you. Like maybe we didn't mention Heather Graham enough. Given her incredible performance.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah. and thank you for doing yeah, so.
For sure. And I, you know, I want to give her a due. And the last thing that I'll say, as far as, you know, maybe we're crazy for not picking it for best scene or anything. It's probably maybe the most iconic scene and the most iconic character kind of is Alfred Molina. And that final, you know, the Sister Christian song leading into.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I fucking love that song leading yeah. into the shootout. I mean, that's when we're talking about Quentin Tarantino. That's like the old standoff, the three-way standoff, the shooting, the running out to the car. I freaking love when when Thomas Jane, who's playing Todd, goes, yeah, we want the safe underneath the bed. And John C. Reilly and Mark Wahlberg are going, no, no, we don't. No, we don't. He doesn't know what he's talking about. It's like, what are you doing, Todd? What are you doing?
Yeah, dude, that's
oh my gosh, leading yeah. into the shootout. I mean, that is like
iconic.
That's kind of iconic, and it's you know, we're talking about the point of the movie again, but it's like the point of the movie, and like all these decisions have led to this place. Like no one in that scene needed to be there, but they all ended up there.
Yeah.
And, but I just wanted to mention that that's an unbelievable scene, and
yeah,
unbelievable character that Alfred Molina.
Perfect chef's kiss way to wrap up the Boogie Nights podcast.
Yeah, agreed.
All right, guys, that's our show. Next week,
yes,
we have got a rocker of a show for you. Yeah. We are doing our top five favorite rom-coms from the 2000s.
Yes.
So from 2000 to yeah. 2009, because there are so many good rom-coms. If we introduce the 90s and the 2010s, we couldn't make the list, people. Right. We couldn't fucking make it. So we have decided to restrict ourselves to yes. the 2000s, and that's still going to be borderline impossible. I'm going to let you know this is going to be Rachel's favorite week that we've ever done. So
Emily is fired up. We're ready to go.
Yeah. So Evan, two, three movies to watch.
Let's have some fun. So first one, yeah, let's not go all the best ones. Go ahead and watch 50 First Dates.
Yep.
Go ahead and watch John Tucker Must Die. And go ahead and watch The Wedding Planner.
I have a question. Yeah. Is 2010, that's the start, that's out, right?
I mean, to us, I don't know. I mean, the 2000s technically is 2000 to 2009.
God, it's so, so fucking annoying because one of my favorite rom-coms of all time came out on January 8th. 2010. So we'll save that for the 2000.
What is it?
Leap year.
Oh yeah, not gonna be. Yes, unfortunately.
Amy Adams. I love Amy Adams. I mean, everyone knows I'm an Amy Adams stan.
Wonderful movie.
Yeah, but it's all right, guys. Hey, that's, you know what? That's why we put these restrictions on ourselves.
Yeah.
8 days too late, Amy. Release it.
So what did I say? 50 First Dates, John Tucker Must Die, Wedding Planner. Boom. Give those three a watch. Let's go from
yeah,
there.
Yeah. Fuck yeah. And guess what? Maybe none of those or all of those might be on our list. So
we'll see.
We'll see. Oh, who knows? Oh. It's the magic of podcasting.
Dude, oh my God. Hey, got to say, anyone who stuck with us, Boogie Nights, what a picture.
Yeah.
Give us a shout. Let us know what you think of that movie, because it is one of the most I mean, it's one of the most talked about movies of all time. So let us.
Hey, also, for anybody that sticks with us throughout all of our rambling podcasts, thank you so much.
Yes, thank
you. We're having a ton of fun. We love the interaction that people are having with us. We understand, you know, sometimes these are long. Sometimes you haven't always watched these movies, but we appreciate you. Last week was one of the more fun episodes we've had. And I just got to say, because I know he's sticking around to the end, Chip, we missed you. We missed you on this week's show. That was a lot of fun. So we're going to have Chip back very soon.
I'll be back.
But until then, we got rom-coms coming next week. Holy shit. That's going to be a frenzy. Yeah. But this was Flicking and Screaming.
Yeah. Thank you all.